When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Tribe of Two, the officially unofficial podcast for The Mandalorian on Disney Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 3, Episode 7, Chapter 23, The Spies. Aaron, who are the spies and why do you love them?
I don't know who the spies are. Are they the Mandalorian survivors? Are they intimating that they're... I mean, there's definitely Alaya Kang.
Yeah, she is a spy.
She is a spy. But multiple spies? Oof, I don't know.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you either, really. I'm sure it's some deep metaphor they're going for that just kind of went right over my head.
If you wanted to send a super sneaky covert message to your embedded imperial asset in the heart of the New Republic,
mm-hmm.
would you send like a data chit or
no.
a code cylinder, perhaps?
Nope.
Would you send an encrypted message or perhaps an equally covert buried operative? Or would you send a giant fucking imperial probe droid?
Hide in plain sight, Aaron. That's what they're doing here.
I don't know if there's an underworld under the world enough for a giant fucking probe droid to come down through some fucking dark alley and nobody's like, "That isn't that an imperial probe droid?" Like, are we fucking allergic to all forms of imperial technology? What the fuck is there an imperial probe droid?
They're betting on irony. They're assuming people will see it and be like, that is so imperial, there's no way it could be imperial.
Check the vintage imperial probe droid. Oh my god, this
right?
neighborhood has got so much culture and history to it. You just love to see it.
Yeah, they're gentrifying the back alleys of Coruscant.
They're gentrifying the underworld of Coruscant. Why not?
Mm-hmm. Good point. So I was watching the Previously On, and I came up with a question that I hadn't thought about when it happened, but Pershing gets his head electrocuted.
Sure.
Is he dead?
Is anyone?
Fair.
I mean, Emperor Palpatine, I saw him thrown down a whole ass radiator shaft, and Project Necromancer comes along, and apparently...
Is he meant to be more or less dead in that scene? Because then I'm thinking, how does Alaya explain this? Like, maybe she could play off like the machine, you know, malfunctioned or whatever, and just kind of scrambled his brain. But if he's dead, that's hard to believe.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if he's like all the way dead, or if he's just like vegetabilized, or if they found some way to. If they're gonna reveal that they found some way to unscramble his brains enough to get the cloning research out of him.
His brains and turned him into a vehicle.
Sure.
Elias,
can we talk about that?
Oh,
can we talk
God.
About how immediately after an episode that mm-hmm. they definitively made sure that we understood the droids are sophisticated, sensitive, conscious beings, aware of mm-hmm. their state in the world and how precarious it is and how everyone's out to get them and there's no one that it can really trust. That the citizens of Navarro saw fit to hollow out.
Mm-hmm.
their hero and have his corpse piloted around by a baby Yoda.
It's real fucked up.
I
love the scene, but when you think about it, it's absolutely appalling.
Yeah. I'm like, imagine if Cara Dune had died in the mm-hmm. first season, which she kind of did career-wise. And then they come back in season three and somebody's like, oh, hey, yeah, we just found this soldier on the battlefield, scooped out her brains, left her brainstem intact, and we shoved a joystick into her chest cavity. And you put and just see like this like slack jawed, like drooling corpse you know, with Baby Yoda in its chest cavity piloting her. It's horrifying.
You do this so to horrifying. A human, it's Hellraiser shit. You do this to a sentient robot and nobody bats an eye.
And it was cute and it was funny and it was a really good gag, but the whole time I'm like, you just set up these droids as being sympathetic creatures and now the horror. Yeah, the horror.
Yeah, that was messed up. Otherwise, aside from the existential horrors of this episode, what'd you think of it?
Mm-hmm. No, I liked it. I think the double Fs are rolling up their sleeves and they are taking on the monumental task of taking the plot of two dueling Hollywood fuckboys and an army of do-nothing, dumb-fuck Hollywood executives, and they are trying to unfuck the Star Wars timeline. They are trying to come up with a plausible reason why the New Republic can stumble out the door, trip on its dick, and fall to a resurgent empire with a resurrected Emperor Sheev Palpatine. Don't forget his full fucking legal name is Sheev Palpatine. They're trying to make sense of this all, and I kind of respect them for it. They're trying to set the stage of like there's aggrieved Imperial loyalists and people who are like fuck this New Republic shit and fuck the I'm still on Team Separatist and showing how hard it is to kind of govern and all the weird sub factions and how the Empire is doing such a great job of twisting those things against each other. I kind of respect it.
It's been the best part of this season for me.
It's hard to know to see how it's going to end up until they get to the other side of the project. But like, I kind of respect that they're trying to do it. They're not just being like, yeah, whatever. That's fucking shit stupid. They're actually trying to earn it post facto. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, those bits and pieces that they've been giving us that have kind of led up to what we're seeing in this episode, what I assume we'll see in next episode. It's made my interest level in this season higher than any previous season because it felt like there were more stakes. It felt like they were trying to tell this larger story in a more interesting way. You know, it wasn't just adventure of the week kind of stuff for the most part. There's always been a bit of the story they're telling here, a bit there, and it all kind of adds up.
Yeah, and I feel like they finally had the luxury of having, you know, the time or maybe the foresight to actually develop some of these minor characters to the point where it means something when they die. Like, I really like Paz. I think he was a cool dude. I don't think it ever got much beyond, like, he's a cool dude and he has a kid and that's pretty sympathetic. But, like, you know, he wasn't, I mean, I guess he was literally a faceless protagonist. But
sure.
But you know, he had enough color on him that I felt something when it was clear that he was going to die. And it made me pissed off in a good way, not in a like, well, that's a stupid kind of way. So, like, I think that that elevates the stakes anytime that there are things to care about. And, you know, people, it's a good thing to have people besides Mando and Grogu for people to, like, give a shit about. And I think they're starting to do that with the Mandalorians at large.
Yeah, all that said, I don't think this is a perfect episode. I think they do some disservice to, let's say, Dark Troopers. They do some disservice to, I think, this series yet again in another, what I assume is coming with the reveal of Grand Admiral Thrawn and knowing that he's going to be in the Ahsoka series. I think they're going to fuck this up again in the same way that they fucked up with Book of Boba Fett, and they're going to have like major chunks of the story for season four happen off, you know, off menu. You're gonna have to go watch Ahsoka to get anything of that, and they're just gonna do it all in previously ons.
Maybe Ahsoka will actually be good.
Yeah, yeah, there's definitely a possibility. It's just the same pattern of like, well, we're not gonna put the main story into this show. You're gonna have to watch another show to get it.
Yeah, but that's never been my problem. I think that the problem is when the other product is so bad that it gets in the way of like, God, do I really want to pick through the shit for the few kernels of corn that are still digestible?
Sure, that's a major problem.
you know, because like that's essentially the Marvel has done that. And I think Marvel's done a better job of having their, you know, their offshoots not be as tied to the canon. But like, to me, the big problem is like, it's like, make it worth my time. And also don't drown, you know, like I don't want to keep up with five shows a week. I don't want this to turn into a fucking soap opera, a literal soap opera that I have to watch every day, or I can't keep up with it. So like, if the because it's always possible that we're going to start seeing the fruits of the double F's taking over and shaping this and getting it back on track. So you're going to have, you know, I guess hopefully, I mean, it'd be nice if Star Wars is not a laughingstock anymore, and that they are able to tell stories at the child level, at the teenage level, and family level, and at the adult level simultaneously. I think that'd be great. But
yeah, it's hard for me to really reconcile all the different names of all these different properties and needing to split it up that way. I mean, if they want to tell one story that folds into each other, then why not just tell it in a story called The Star Wars and tell it with
and
all the characters
family rated,
in all the same show, right? I guess, like, yeah, you can have the experiments like Andor, because I love Andor, but I don't need to go search out parts of the story that I missed. Like, oh, I have to, what is this other series? You know, do I need to watch that? Is it going to be important to this show? It confuses the plot to me.
Yeah. Do you think they need something to identify like the main canon? Like, you know, because like there wasn't
just
Solo
like
a Star Wars tale or something. So you have stuff that's like set in the, you know, because Andor is a perfect, it cannot change the canon because it's all in the past.
It's all set too. Yeah.
It's more mature. It's a little darker. And that's going to be a Star Wars tale where like Mandalore, the stuff that's actually building the canon is pitched at family and it's called the main star. I don't know. But,
yeah, I just don't want to have to like figure out what I need to watch to get the story, you know?
Yeah,
because Obi-Wan's not essential, obviously.
Right.
Or Kenobi or whatever the hell they call it. Yeah, Andor's not essential. What is essential?
Yeah,
Boba Fett
is
essential for like three episodes, but
Star Wars canon used to be really simple. It was like the movies. And then below that were kind of like the novels and the video games. And then below that were like the video games. And as long as you, the canon worked to where it's like, if you enjoyed the movies, that you knew everything you needed to enjoy the comics and the books. And if you enjoy them, you can enjoy the video games, but like, you know, maybe not vice versa. And I wonder if they can build it out that way where it's like they have, but then now it's like, you know, what the fuck? There hasn't been a Star Wars movie in years. It's just been this Disney Plus stuff of wildly varying quality, but I don't know. I'm just saying that I'm a little excited because, like, I don't like just missing Star Wars content because I think it's going to suck and I've got better things to do in my life. Like, you'd have told me 20 years ago that I'd be like, yeah, there's going to be this live action Star Wars with top notch special effects and Hollywood A-listers and major talent behind it. And you're going to be like, I don't know if I want to see that. I would think you're fucking crazy. But that's how far the brand has fallen. And I think that, you know, Favre and Filoni might be the guys to get it back to must-see TV territory, which would be awesome.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, all that is to say they're doing an Ahsoka series coming out in August, I think, and they're introducing elements here in this episode that I think are going to be very important in that show.
Oh, yes. This felt very important for developing other series, to your point, yeah.
Yeah, and maybe we could talk about it here in, like, the second scene, but let's get into the recap.
Okay.
This is the ad break. We will return. I have spoken.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues, but then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question: who framed Roger Rabbit?
Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV+, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
This podcast is in your care. Welcome back to Tribe of Two.
We start off with Alaya going to the back alleys of Coruscant, meeting with a hologram of Moff Gideon. She reports that the pirates on Navarro were defeated by Din and Bo's Mandos. He says he'll deal with them and to continue her mission. I knew it. I fucking knew it. She was not a true Blue New Republic servant, loyalist, whatever. She's Imperial through and through.
We've heard of the Martin three-step reveal. I think this is the Martin for real reveal. Like, this is pitched at a Saturday morning cartoon crowd, so we have to make sure we leave no one behind and have a fucking Imperial probe droid show up with Moff Gideon giving her explicit directions to. Mm-hmm. My question to you is, what is her mission? Like her. What do you think that there is another shoe to drop for us to understand what her, because this is her, or this is just what she did on the way of doing her real mission?
Yeah, so continue the mission. I mean, she's been doing the mission. The mission just, is probably to clean up loose ends, make sure the New Republic doesn't get wind of what they're doing out in the outer room,
what they did. Do you think she's also like trying to, was there any part of her trying to secure the asset? Like, would, if Pershing was like still loyal to the Empire, would he have been evacuated from Coruscant and spirited away?
That's a good question.
Yeah. Like, is she like there to determine like, okay, there's Imperial assets and we either need to burn them to make sure that they don't tell what we've been up to, or if they're still, you know, willing to work for us. But she also plays everything with this conflict. Like, is there also a possibility that is the double or the, I guess triple agent possibility still on the table?
I don't think so. I mean, this reveal is pretty black and white.
It's like she's got the same reaction to like Andor has when he kills one of his assets. It's like he's not happy about it and he feels bad, but also he's committed to the cause, so fuck him.
Yeah, I think so. I think if Pershing was not willing to continue his research, I mean, he's manipulable, right? Like, that's the real thing. That's the reason she kills him, is because he could be turned. Because he was turned twice in that episode, right?
Yeah, I suppose. But it was always for like, oh, because I really want to serve the New Republic, you know? It's not because the New Republic sucks. It's just, you know, they don't understand how I could be helping them.
So, I don't know. Big developments there. We get to find out that she is up to no good. Still working with Gideon. Gideon's alive. He's out there. He had no trouble getting away, apparently. And then he goes and meets with a group of Imperial holograms. They talk about Grand Admiral Thrawn's coming return. And then Gideon requests reinforcements to deal with the Mandalorians, and they agree to provide them.
There's a lot of cool stuff in here. There's him walking past his laser storage grid of these strangely light colored dark troopers, then past rows of clone tanks, and he steps in his holoconference with all these Imperial warlords. I just thought this was a great scene. It also makes a lot of sense. Like, we were speculating like what faction of Mandos would work with Moff Gideon, because, you know, he's an Imperial and they're the ones that destroyed their world, etc. Well, he's a set up shop on Mandalore, and he's mining, but just like you, we kind of like said, like, you know, he's mining Beskar. Yeah, and he's doing it. We asked a question two episodes later. Moff Gideon's doing it.
This is an interesting sort of twist on hide in plain sight as well, right? Like, you've devastated the whole world of your enemy. You've driven them from it. They think it's all destroyed, and you're down there covertly creating a force to destroy them even further. I love it. Thought that was really cool. Project Necromancer, though, is just the dumbest name for this. I mean,
but it's also
I wonder
the
what
dumbest
Project Necromancer and what they're doing over there working on that.
I took this as deliberate commentary on the stupidity of the Rise of Skywalker.
Okay.
Like,
all right,
this,
sure.
Like, the like, okay, somehow Emperor Palpatine returned. If you guys are not going to spend even 2 seconds thinking about it, then we're not going to spend 1 second on the name. It's going to be obvious and stupid. Project Necromancer. Yeah. We're going to bring back a horrifying space wizard from death. What do we call it? Project Necromancer. I kind of love it. I kind of love it. Yeah.
If that's what they were going for, they nailed it.
And they got, I think this is supposed to be Commander Hux's father. Or Admiral Hux, or General Hux, or whatever.
Is it Domhnall Gleeson?
Domhnall Gleeson, yes. But I think that's supposed to be his father that's working on Project Necromancer, which explains why his son ends up so highly placed, even though he's clearly kind of out of his depth.
Huh, okay.
But the big news is Captain Pelion, who, if you're a Heir to the Empire fan from way back in like 1991, you know, is Grand Admiral Thrawn's right-hand man. I'm very curious at how they handle Grand Admiral Thrawn. If it's going to be an actor with CG, if it's going to be just all conventional, if it's going to be all CG.
So they talked about this. I read an interview, maybe with both of the Fs, I can't remember. But they talked about Grand Admiral Thrawn. He's played by Lars Mikkelsen, I think. So
no shit.
He is not going to be all CG. And they were talking about him spending hours in the makeup booth and how hard it is to get that blue just right. So,
oh, yeah, I bet. Okay.
I think they're doing a pretty good job. They're taking a lot of care with that.
Yeah, Lars Mikkelsen, he's the one I most recognize him as. He played the kind of Putin analog in House of Cards.
Okay. It's been a while. I don't quite remember him. That was like 8 years ago or something.
Yeah, it was a long time. But that's cool. All right. Good. Yeah, no, I'm excited. It's funny because they're treating this as like it's like maybe a rumor. Moff Gideon is kind of shitting on the idea that Grand Admiral Thrawn is returning. Mm-hmm. And it's a perfect council of Imperial warlords because none of them trust each other. The only thing that kind of unifies them is an external threat. They all fear and respect Mandalore.
Mm-hmm.
Or the power of Mandalore, and they're kind of clowning on Gideon and his reinforcements until he makes it clear that he's taken out a larger threat for them, and then they fall in line.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason they fear a resurgent Mandalore so much is because they've got their project sort of headquartered there, right? Like at least Gideon's arm of it. They don't want them coming back to reclaim their homeland and destroying their operations there. So.
Yeah.
The other good news about the Thrawn stuff for you, Aaron, I know you're a big fan, is that one of Thrawn's, let's say, acolytes, I thought it was going to be his right-hand man. That's how I heard it phrased. It's going to be played by Wes Chatham.
Pelion was. Yes! Yes, that's Amos from The Expanse, if you don't know.
Yeah, he's great.
He's dreamy. I like him. I like him a lot. I'm curious to see him. I wonder if they're going to have him kind of play essentially the same role.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be like a dead-eyed killer, or if they're going to let him show a little bit more range.
I hope more range, because if you listen to him talk or you hear him interviewed or listen to his podcast, Ty and That Guy, you know that he is nothing like Amos in real life.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he has a lot more range. He can be extremely charming. And I think it would be real cool to see him do something other than, you know, dead-eyed killer kind of thing.
That's just going to be worse. You know, that the Grand Admiral Thrawn had that, like, Nogiri, the shadow assassin species. And it was like this, they always described it as like a vampire bat-looking thing. They're just going to bury him under pounds and pounds of latex makeup and have him be a horrifying assassin alien that's just skulking in the shadows. Because it's like when he was described in casting as a Thrawn's right hand man, I'm like, what the fuck is there? Are they gonna kill Captain Pelion?
I don't know. I mean, they can
retcon
all that, right? It's all Star Wars Legends at this point, so
sure,
they could just change it. They don't have to abide by the book.
I like this Captain Paleon because they always describe him in the book as kind of like, you know, like the good Imperial, kind of like they talk about him like he's Rommel. You know, I was like, well, yeah, he's a Nazi, okay. But he was a principled, honorable Nazi that might have not wanted to do all the thing. And he's like, you know, because he his internal monologues in like Heir of the Empire is always about like, you know, how stupid Palpatine's anti-alien racism was and how dumb the, you know, stupid reliance on super weapons and force powers and, you know, just he believes in order in the galaxy, damn it, and wants to bring it with as minimal fuss and muss as possible. Okay. I kind of like that archetype.
Mm-hmm.
The one respectable guy on the shit heel side.
Sure.
But I don't know if they're going to have Wes Chatham. So I feel like they're going to throw the old man over and just make it the Chatham show.
Yeah, that'd be all right with me.
Yeah, I guess. I'd miss Paleon.
All right, Bo's Mando.
But there's always Project Necromancer. Anyone that dies.
It's true. Just bring him back.
No one's ever really gone. Mm-hmm. Not in Star Wars. It's bad as the fucking X-Men lately, I tell you.
Bo's Mandos arrive on Navarro. Bo worries that her Mandos won't get along with Mando's Mandos. Seems to be some tension, but the armorer tells her Mandos to prepare a feast. And then Grief gives Mando a booze gift and says, I have another gift also. I love that people are so enthralled with rebuilding Navarro that they do not notice an Imperial shuttle coming in until it literally casts a shadow on them.
Yeah.
They're gigantic and they don't see them coming in the sky. Come on.
Or like on long range hyperspace sensors like this.
Sure, sure.
This world is, it kind of needs New Republic protection, it seems like, because we've seen the entire population of the town is like 40, 50 people. Mm-hmm. Nobody's looking at the space scopes. They're just really, and I thought it was cool that like they portray Karga as kind of worried about this development. Like, it's all well and good when you've got a whole bunch of, you know, Mandalorians, like a 50, 60 of them huddled on the outskirts of town. But when they start landing Star Destroyers in your mm-hmm. backyard, you're like, Jesus, who's the guest and who is the host? You know,
They're all going to want land. I don't know if they have that much land.
Right. Right. And so he's trying
can't
to
make
do
them all
some
magistrates.
He's trying to do some scotch bottle diplomacy here with some Coruscantian liquor
mm-hmm.
and a horrifying metal puppet.
Apparently this is Michael Jordan's tequila bottle. Did you find anything out about this bottle? I don't know why I was going to look up liquor bottles when I see them, but this is apparently a real liquor bottle. It's
Michael Jordan has a tequila brand. Okay.
Michael Jordan has tequila because, of course, any big celebrity needs a tequila brand. This is one of his bottles, I guess.
Well, okay. How much is a bottle of Michael Jordan's tequila? So we just looked it up. These Michael Jordan bottles start at $140 and go up from there. Damn, his liquor is more than his shoes in some cases.
Uh-huh.
And you can wear those on your feet for years.
Well, but you got to buy two of them. That's the catch.
Oh, that's true.
So you can buy shoes for $100, or you could buy two bottles of booze for $280 and wear those on your feet. I don't know, man.
Glass slippers indeed.
Is it any coincidence that they busted out the Michael Jordan tequila in chapter 23?
Oh my God. How
Michael
deep
Jordan cameo is all I'm
go?
Saying. Episode 8.
That's why they had to stuff the two episodes of The Mandalorian in the Book of Boba, because they knew the chapter shit wouldn't work. Yeah, and they had the sponsor. That sponsor already lined up 2 years ago. Insane.
Anyway, that's just a little bit of trivia. It's pretty dumb. I couldn't help but think, you know, if you're trying to smooth things over between two disparate groups of Mandos, taking your helmets off right as you meet them is probably not the best move, but it does make a statement. It does say, this is who we are, so deal with it.
Yes. Yeah, and it's like, I was wanting to talk about like the latest in Cult Watch, because
I haven't heard the armor do any kind of like, everyone has to be, we all must be united under the way of Mandalore. Like, she's content to bang her hammer and tongs together, invite everyone to feasts and let everybody show their faces. And even though it's uncomfortable, I actually gives me a little hope that they are, it's not going to be everyone embraces the way of the Mandalore, but the Death Watch people are going to slowly embrace the ways of maybe we can show our face and still be honorable. I mean, like the Mando speech at the end, it's like, what matters to me is honor and loyalty and character.
I want to say it's because the armor is sort of deferring to Bo at this point as the person who's going to unify the Mandos. But if you look at it, you know, from a certain point of view, Mando is the one who is unifying the Mandos, right? If it becomes more about honor, if that is the way, then yeah, you could see that as Mando kind of leading the way.
Yeah.
All right. Grief takes Mando inside and shows him what they've done to IG-11. Apparently, they removed his brain and turned him into a vehicle for Grogu called IG-12, which I assume stands for Integrated Grogu 12. he rides IG-12 through the streets, taking various market goods for himself. I love this scene. I don't think about how horrifying it is, but it's so fun. Right, you stick Grogu in here, all he can do is say yes or no. He loves saying it. He loves teetering around in this droid. This reminds me so much of the vibe of like Yoda on Dagobah the first time you meet him.
Yes.
Like, mine, that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah.
This felt extraordinarily Star Wars to me.
Trying to steal candy bars and granola bars and whatnot. No, it's very funny. Like him, like stiff arming his dad and being like, you know, the whole, you know, get him out of there. No. Well, how about we just let him pilot around? Yes. Now we got to get him out of there. No, it's. And then once he starts stomping around outside, and he's just strutting around saying yes.
He loves it, man.
Yes. He's just so happy. And like, and everyone is taking notice of this giant hulking thing is going down. Taking this glee and just it's unnerving people, and Mando's sitting there like, oh man, it's really funny.
I'm amazed he could tolerate it because it's really annoying.
But he's that's just how much he loves his little boy. But true. No, it's like I said, it's horrifying, but also the whole concept is horrifying, and I'm surprised they did it on the back of last episode, which is so sympathetic to droids. But I mean, it's a tough galaxy out there for droids, man. They're just not valued or seen as human, even if they build a statue out of you, which we already kind of talked about how that alone was kind of horrifying. But
So that was a fun scene, and then we go over to Bo telling the combined Mandos that it's time to take back their homeworld. She proposes that they park the fleet in orbit over Mandalore, send down a small landing party to figure out the status of the homeworld. And then Mando volunteers himself and Grogu, and then pretty much all of the Mandalorians volunteer, including the armorer.
Yeah. That's pretty much what happens. They're just going to go and try to figure out exactly what the disposition of Mandalore and resettle it.
Yeah. Then we get them doing that. They take their fleet to Mandalore. The landing party drops in. They get started looking for the forge, but they run into a ship full of Mandalorians who turns out are still loyal to Bo. And who
unless they're
would
the spies.
Show up? Well,
unless they're part of the spies.
It could be the titular spies. Skinny Pete would never be a spy. Charles Baker, too good to play a spy.
Did you recognize him right off the bat?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Same. I'm like, by God, that's Skinny Pete. And if you don't know what we're talking about, Breaking Bad.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say you can't possibly understand this episode of The Mandalorian unless you've seen every episode of every season of Breaking Bad. You need to understand the Skinny P performance to understand what Charles Baker is doing here with his surviving scout character, I think is how he's credited. Yeah.
Yeah, you just know that this guy is addicted to death sticks and he's probably out there scrounging around for him.
Sure. Sure. It's funny they asked for food when what they really wanted was their death sticks. You can tell. So there's some restraint that they're showing here.
Yeah. He's just trying to get off world so he can go to the spice mines of Kessel.
Oh my god, yeah. Just can you imagine if there's a meth mines.
Meth mines of Kessel, yeah.
Oh man.
Oh, maybe that's why he's so happy on Mandalore here, because they glassed the surface.
Of course. Do you think they call their trimaran here the crystal ship?
Yep. So what is this thing, man? It's some weird land glider. Is this a typical Mandalorian vehicle, or is this like a scavenged sort of thrown together vehicle?
I think it's the latter. Like, I think that they do have these things like in salt flats, you know, very flat kind of hard ground where you can, you know, tie a ski. They also do this like on frozen lakes. I've seen guys do like lake sailing and stuff. And it just feels like one of these post-apocalyptic Mad Max contraptions that they have lashed together to travel distances on Mandalore. Now that everything has just been destroyed in an inferno.
Seemed like it to me too.
I thought it was cool. Like, at first I thought they were like sailing, and then I got that, like, no, they're actually just scooting over the glass surface of the world, and I thought that was kind of neat.
They've got some they're not pontoons, what are they called, skis?
Yeah,
it's like a snowmobile, except it glides across the land.
Land skiff.
I like it. So they have a meal with those Mandos where Bo has to tell him the story of her surrender to Moff Gideon. And she laments that it's always their own division that destroys their people. I don't remember what we already knew of her backstory. This is played like a big character reveal, like that she actually surrendered to save her people.
I think this is stuff that the Clone Wars people knew, although maybe it's like there's a gap. But that's the thing. It's like, that's why I think this is annoying, is like, I just want this thing to tell me the story in its own terms. And now I'm like, did this is something I'm half remembering from an email a long time ago or what?
Right.
But the fact that she tried to secure a surrender with honor type terms with the Empire. And then the Empire betrayed them. Yeah, I mean, I think that's like pretty noble. And you question the wisdom of the Empire welching on that deal.
But you also, like, it might be noble in our culture, but in their culture, it's sort of heretical, right? It's sort of seen
as
forbidden.
It's not the way.
Right, it's definitely not the way. They want to fight to the death, to the last person. And you can see that reflected in the Mandos who were still there. They say they've spun their own fiction, which is, we resisted to the last person. We would not surrender. And so the Empire tried to wipe us out, but they couldn't. That's not at all what happened.
The thing that I didn't think they did a very good job is why the Mandalorians all kind of were cool with this explanation. It felt like someone should have been pissed off or outraged.
Yeah. And I think there are looks of kind of dismay and horror on their faces when they cut back to them, but they don't voice it.
Right. The only one that voices is the Mando himself, Din Djarin, who says that this makes me think you're even cooler, you know?
Right. Right.
That's so honorable. That's like, if it's a completely new, because like, look at the way the Mandalorian covert treated when Jin got up and suggested that they take this parcel of play, like, they're all just murmuring and like, oh my God, I can't believe. And like, Paz had to get up and give this speech to kind of quell it. But this is just kind of like, was, I thought, taken in stride a little bit, except for the guys who were surviving on the surface.
Right.
I thought that there was a couple looks between them and they
this might be something that they remember. This might be them becoming spies. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at their proximity to Moff Gideon, you could say maybe he's influenced them. Maybe he sent them out knowing the Mandos were here.
Well, especially since they felt like such failures. And then she gave them up so long ago, and they've been sitting on this blasted world trying to fulfill her last orders that they and like, I could see some real resentment in that. You know,
for sure.
And they hate everybody. They hate the Night Owls that left. They hate the Death Watch that did nothing. You know, I feel like they have real, if you want to put a finger on some Mandalorian dissenters who are going to cause some problems in the future, it might be them.
Yeah, I can see it. After Bo's confession, Mando encourages her to keep trying to unify their people by saying that he only believes in honor and she's got it in spades. The newfound Mandos tell Bo that they can take her to the Forge, so they set off for it in their weird surface glider.
Yeah, they're very enthusiastic here. So, like, either they got over it quickly, or this is them leading them deliberately into a trap, and it kind of feels that way, the way that everything else pulls out.
Yeah, like I mean, Gideon knows exactly where they are, seemingly, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Paz, on the ride to the Forge, Paz and Axe get into a fight.
Wait a second. Yeah. I want to challenge that. It's possible that Gideon had no idea where they were. It's just that Gideon set up shop next to the Great Forge, which makes a lot of sense. That's where all the Beskar is, right?
Sure.
It's already kind of like all the tunnels probably lead there. So it's more of like the Mando's objective just happened to be Gideon's base.
Yeah, but when I say like he knows exactly where they are, I mean like when they show up, he's on top of them. He already like he's got a trap ready to spring on them.
But they're just like two hallways and two blast doors away from his base, so it's like
true.
I mean, I'm not trying to think. It's like I believe you. I'm playing Gideon's advocate here, and then I'm trying to be like, yeah, well, maybe because otherwise you think that Skinny P and the other guys just went and said, fuck these guys, we're going to give them up to the Imperials, which is kind of wild too, because like maybe they hate the Mandalorians, but there's no way they would betray them to Gideon of all people.
Yeah, the reason I'm inclined to think it was more of a trap and he was on to them is because he says as much at the beginning, right? Like, I need these things to fight off the Mandos, who I know are coming.
Because he knows they're coming. And right. Okay. Yeah, so, all right.
I mean, that's my guess. It could also be the latter, that they just showed up and he's like, well, I got all my guys here, so let's kill him. Anyway, Paz and Axe get into a fight over some Mandalorian game. Chess-like game, I assume.
Yeah, it's not Holo Chess, and nope. It's not Sabacc. So God only knows what it could be, because those are the only two Star Wars games I know.
IG-12 steps in to stop the fighting because he's the only one who can. I gotta say, not wearing a helmet in a fight is a huge disadvantage.
Yeah,
one punch
in fact,
from him and you're done, man.
Yeah, like who'd you say this guy's name was? This cocky Night Owl guy?
Axe Woves,
Jesus. He does like a rocket knee right to Paz's grill. Uh-huh. And you got to wonder if he would have had his teeth left if he had been wearing his helmet. Like, yeah, fucking wear your helmet in a duel? In a vibro-knife duel?
Right.
I continue to love the vibro technology. It's so cool the way they envision it.
Yeah, I like it. I don't know how you hold on to something like that, but because I'm thinking of like that effect where, let's say you're skateboarding really fast down a not super smooth surface, like a big long paved hill or something.
Yeah.
There's a lot of vibration that happens, and it's hard just to stand on the board. I imagine holding onto one of those vibro blades isn't easy.
They must have the handle must be really isolated and comfortable, because I don't know what the fuck you're talking about in terms of skateboarding, but like, yeah, if you've ever like done a chainsaw for a while, it can actually do nerve damage.
Yeah,
like you can get permanent nerve damage from your hands being vibrated, so they must have that figured out. Plus they're wearing Beskar gloves, god only knows.
True. So when IG-12 steps in, Mando says he didn't learn that from me. He must have learned it from Luke, right? This is the more pacifist, more like conflict averse Luke teachings.
Yeah. Yeah. He stopped him with the sheer wholesomeness.
Mm-hmm.
It was sweet. It was sweet too. As funny as the yes, 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 him coming in and separating them physically with the no, no, no was pretty cute in a different way.
And then we get a quick scene of the armor taking the starving Mandos back to their fleet in orbit. And then the Mandos headed to the forge, run into a big old creature, and their ship is destroyed, but they happen to be right outside the forge. So they just kind of walk in. The forge has been...
This is not a mythosaur, right?
I don't think so, no. Some other creature.
Man, fucking Mandalore is infested with all kinds of kaiju.
Ride one of those. That'll impress me.
That's what I'm talking about. Fuck your mythosaur. Strap your leg over... Throw your leg over one of these bad boys and see what happens. I'll follow you then.
Right.
Forget your little Darksaber business. Yeah, it's such a weird thing. Like, they're just giant monsters under the ground, then it pops out, and they can run into a mine shaft and escape it. It's weird. Also, I
love
the fact that the
Mandalorians...
Maybe these things
were created by like, the radiation from the bombing or something, right?
She even said there's been these great beasts have been awoken from slumber. Like, yeah, like, they're... Like, imagine if their dinosaurs didn't die out, they just hibernated. Like, the comet hit, they're like, ah, fuck, yeah. It's cold. We're gonna dig under a quarter mile of mud, and then we woke them up with atomic bomb. That's actually the plot of Godzilla.
A lot of movies. Yeah, Godzilla, yeah. Phantoms, a Dean
but
Case
yeah,
movie.
Like, what? Yeah, what if, like, all these woolly mammoths and giant ground sloths and tyrannosaurs just popped out of the ground when we got a little too frisky with the environment? Maybe that'd be a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, let's see. What were you going to say about the Imperials?
Oh, I love the fact that Mandos remember they have jetpacks and they don't have to stand against doomed odds. You know, it's like they forget that when they're in an alley in Navarro, but when their skiff's about to just be destroyed, they can just bone out. All right, we just bone out. We're not stuck here.
Mm-hmm.
Hit the bricks, guys. They're out of there.
So they head into the caves, where they find a whole boatload of Beskar enhanced dark troopers who fly in and attack them. Bo's guy decides to run. This is Axe. Decides to run and fetch the fleet while they fight off the Imperials. At least I think it's him because he's now got his helmet on. They eventually find a whole Imperial base. Mando's captured by Moff Gideon. Bo and the others run while Paz stays behind to provide cover, and he's killed by Gideon's Praetorian guards. End of the episode. It's a lot here.
They did a good job of, like, having Paz and Axe go on this one episode arc of being distrustful and kind of scornful of each other, and then getting a grudging respect, and Grogu, you know, kind of squashing the beef. I still wondered. Anytime one guy escapes from, like, what's surely a would-be massacre, and he's kind of, like, played with a little bit of a skewed angle, like, do you think Axe is a spy?
The spies are...
Because what the fuck did he do? He just escaped, right?
Yeah,
like, he did
away.
Bring reinforcements. I guess
Not
we'll have
yet.
To wait till next episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because
I assume,
like,
there's going to be a fleet battle next time, right? You got the TIE bombers, you've got all these Mandalorian ships in orbit.
Yeah, I think so.
So we'll see. But yeah, it is convenient that he gets the hell out of there. So I think they've done a fair bit of disservice to Dark Troopers in this episode. They talk like they are upgraded by Beskar armor, right?
Sure.
And he's talking about this Frankenstein army made of Jedi powers and Beskar, Mandalorian Beskar and the Imperial.
The clones.
Whatever. Yeah, clones.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But they're de facto weaker than the Dark Troopers we saw Mando fight on the ship in season 2's finale. So
it seems like
what
it,
are
maybe?
We doing? Like, Paz just mows down. Mando almost got killed by a single one of these. Couldn't really take it out himself. Paz just mows them down by the hundreds with just a gun.
It is like a heavy repeating blaster. I mean, it's like if you use if you use a handgun on something and then you get out a 50 caliber machine gun and you're like, oh my God, how is it doing so much more damage? Well,
But I don't know. It felt like they were like dark troopers in a video game. They're roughly three times harder to kill than a stormtrooper, you know? Yeah.
These are supposed to be Beskar upgraded ones.
But you had one Mando versus a couple of, now you've got like a whole squad of Mandos versus kind of like roughly equal. I did think they lost their minds a little bit at the end because Paz was just like, he's like you said, mowing them down. It wasn't like he had to get six or seven shots dead on target. He was just like, if any of his beams touch these guys, they're going down.
Yeah. I was way more, they felt like much more of a threat in the season two appearance than they do here. And that's a shame because they're talking about how they're so upgraded. And then they do them a further disservice by bringing in the Praetorian Guards, which are what I would expect the Dark Troopers to be in terms of power level, right? This is power creep. This is like, they came out with a new set, Magic the Gathering, and suddenly your Dark Troopers suck compared to, you know, this 5-4 Praetorian Guard for one blue and one colorless. Like,
Yeah. I remember the old lore for the Imperial Guard, who they've turned into the Praetorian Guard now, and how they are like the elite of the elite stormtroopers, and they're specially trained to fight like Jedi opponents, and they have upgraded armor. And I feel like that three of those should be an easy match for a Mandalorian. And they would be, I would think, an Imperial Guard would be harder to beat than a Dark Trooper, but
I do too.
Oof. Three of them. Like what, that's the thing is that he just 1v30 of these, of the Dark Troopers. And then you get the Praetorian Guard on top of it. Yeah. I don't know. It did. I did like, I thought Paz looked so badass. He like, I've talked about it a million times. He looks like a Titan from Destiny. He's got this heavy weapon and it's like starting to glow red and orange and it just like melts together. And then he uses that to beat a couple guys and he's punching dudes in Beskar armor out and throwing them off cliffs. And it just made him seem like a real badass. And I guess I like Paz enough that I'm okay with them kind of besmirching. Cause like, I guess in the next, what you really need to understand is these guys would just be unstoppable against your average Republic troops. Right.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I guess what I'm trying to say is I think what they're saying is that these are knockoff. They're not as good as a Mandalorian. They are a compromise taking the best parts of three or four different warrior species, but they're not quite as good as a full Jedi or a full Mandalorian. But they can overwhelm them. But like, yeah, against your average stormtrooper army or against your average New Republic army, these guys are going to just cut through them like hot butter. So I think,
yeah, this is what I don't like about it. They simultaneously try to, in the same scene, upgrade them, and then they de facto downgrade them by having the Praetorian Guards, by having Paz mow through them. They're saying in this scene they're upgraded and better than ever, but I've seen how good they were before, and now I see them as just getting mowed down.
I wish I'd gone back and watched the other Dark Trooper scene to see what you're talking about, because I remember them doing the same kind of tricks, like Mando is just running into them and soaking up shots with his Beskar armor, which is kind of what they all do in mass in this episode. So like I don't know.
I don't know.
I had a
that.
Slight problem with how easily Paz is killing him, but
anyway, not the biggest problem in the world. Now we just need to understand that the Praetorian Guards are the real threats to watch out for.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the other thing is like the Dark Troopers are still mass produced troops. They're not like ever going to be as good as a Praetorian Guard.
But there are going to be a lot more of them. And so that's why they're
dangerous. Why did the Mandalorians, because there's this one scene where it's supposed to be this badass where it's like they've taken, because we didn't even talk about this. They took Mando down. They just like rope him up and disarm him and lead him away, separate him from Grogu. That's very sad. But Moff Gideon, you know, is issuing this ultimatum from the other side of the blast door saying like, you know, you need to give me the Darksaber, renounce your rule over Mandalore and make me the commander. And her and Paz kind of look each other and Paz nods and says, this is the way. All the Mandalorians just open up fire on the blast door and Bo-Katan runs to the other side and starts cutting. Why did the Mandalorians do that?
Shoot the blast door? I don't know.
Is it just like just defiance? Is it like giving cover to like hiding what Bo-Katan's doing? Because it doesn't
work. It's like
work.
Flipping him the bird.
Okay.
I don't know, but I assume, yeah.
They can't show their face, but they can bare cheeks. They just do the Braveheart thing where they drop mm-hmm. their trap. They just moon Gideon. Because that's the thing, is like Gideon can't hurt. Until that blast door comes up, no one can hurt anyone. I don't buy that you can just shoot through what does it look like a foot of Durasteel.
Yeah, no way.
Yeah, I don't think that small arms can penetrate that, even Paz's fucking rifle. But I don't know. Maybe it is. It's just defiance. I thought that was just funny, though, that they're all just blasting this door to no avail.
I mean, Gideon here is delusional, too, right? Like, the idea that you can just hand him the Darksaber and suddenly the Mandalorians are going to follow him is insane.
It seems like it's the way they work, though. Maybe they're changing. Maybe this they're going to have this thing where all three of the distinct cults kind of like temper each other and they have a new era of tolerance and unity on Mandalore. I think that's kind of where they're going for. But
yeah, I think it's they've kind of made that point over the course of the season is that.
But Gideon still thinks they're the old Mandalorians.
Right.
And
right.
He thinks they're going to be easy to fracture and divide and. You know, what she,
yeah,
I mean,
but it, like,
it's a good bet. That's their entire history, according to Bo-Katan. They're too powerful to be taken down by anyone but themselves.
I mean, fool me once, shame on you, right? Like, you're really gonna follow the Imperial with the Darksaber after what the Imperials did to you? Like, even if he thinks that they're the old Mandos.
Yeah.
He's got to know that there's a history here and they're probably unwilling to trust the Empire in any way, right?
Yeah, and especially since the flavor of his threat was lay down your arms, renounce your saber, renounce the planet, and I'm going to kill you anyway. Because okay. That's what he's saying, like the purge of Mandalore will be complete. Like, not the surrender of Mandalore.
Right, so why would they? And he's talking to a culture that fights to the death. There is honor. It's like telling the Klingon to lay down his
maybe
sword,
he just thinks
right?
he's untouchably powerful. Because the other thing is we haven't talked about is while they're desperately trying to escape this situation, he's already sending his interceptors and his bombers out to destroy their fleet.
Yeah.
Which would suck. So yeah, I don't know. I think Gideon is delusional. He's got this Darth armor now. Did you notice his helmet is kind of modeled along the lines of God damn it, the Ray Park guy, Darth Maul. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got those little kind of like hook horn shapes around like a little bit of a crown.
Okay, yeah, I thought
that was kind of deliberate. But yeah, I think you're supposed to understand he is delusional. Mm-hmm. He thinks he's the only hope of the Empire. All the other guys are dupes, and he's got a grand plan that's going to unite everyone under his banner.
Yeah, I assume that when Thrawn does return, I assume Thrawn's going to return, considering he's been cast in Ahsoka, that there's going to be a battle between him and Gideon. Because I don't think Gideon is on board with the plan of the Council or whatever group of Imperials he's working with currently. He's just using them.
Well,
he's trying to concentrate his own power, right? He probably views this as an opportunity. Like, I've been attacked by Mandalorians. This is an opportunity for me to gain more reinforcements, more power, concentrate the group's power on me.
As much as I would love to see a battle between Gideon and Thrawn, the thing that really depresses me is that I think we have there's a triumvirate here trying to wrestle for supremacy of the Empire, and it's Thrawn, it's Gideon, and it's fucking Sheev Palpatine's corpse.
Uh-huh.
And I know who wins. I know who wins.
Yeah.
And it's the dumbest option. It's the dumbest of these three options. So, mm-hmm. like, the double Fs have a huge task cut out ahead of them to make that okay.
Are they going to... trying to think, are they going to parallel maybe the New Republic's disarray with maybe the disarray within the ranks here between Gideon and Thrawn?
Well, I mean, that's all. You always think your side is the most fractious until you look over the fence and like, oh my God, they're going at it.
Right.
Vibro knife and tong over there. But I think they're showing that they are as not as you. And that was kind of like a thing with the Andor, too. It's like you think, you know, the rebels think that the Imperials are this monolithic unified front
And they're not. There's all kinds of petty squabbles and rivalries and feudal regimes and all kinds of stuff. So there's, it's just like, again, I've seen the movies and I know which side. It's Sheev with his 1,000 Star Destroyers is going to come out on top of this global shit heap, and or I'm sorry, galactic shit heap.
Mm-hmm.
I undersold it. I don't know how they make that cool, but we'll see.
We'll see. I think it has a lot of potential to be cool. You have to ignore a lot of stuff that's going to come after this, but here in this show, or I guess in this series of shows, I think they have potential to make it cool.
And there's also, oh God, there's also Snoke. You got to fit Snoke in there. Snoke is the, he's the fake Sheev.
And he's tough to fit in
off the real one.
You know, when he's manifesting as that gigantic. Yeah, he's tough to fit anywhere.
Yeah,
tough to travel with that guy.
Do you think that's going to be one of the attempted Do you think Snoke is going to be one of the attempted Sheevs?
Oh yeah, he's a fucked up.
Because I always
clone,
thought he
sure.
looked a little mm-hmm. like fucked up Palpatine. Yeah.
Yep.
Old Sheev.
I mean the How's Boba Fett going to feel about all this?
this Boba clone Fett is program. Like. Is trying to hold on to the throne of Jabba. That's some small stakes. I don't care.
Fair. I mean, I don't care really either.
Close
but
that
like,
book. Close that
if
book.
If we're talking
burn
clones,
it.
Your dad's
close
got a history
book.
With clones, man. You
burn
got a history
it.
With clones, man.
Close the book. Burn it. Defund any library that refuses. I'm going scorched earth on the Book of Boba.
Fair. I guarantee Disney is not. Disney is going to make a second season of Book of Boba, whether you like it or not, Aaron.
Yeah, maybe Ron DeSantis can save us. He can just forget about all this critical race theory and
Moff DeSantis
and concentrate on banning the Book of Boba to protect our children.
There
from
you go.
The stupidity that they would get from watching future installments of it.
Anyway,
probably not. Probably
that's
not.
That's it.
We got some feedback though. Would you like to consider that?
Yeah, let's do it. We have to rid this planet of enemy sorcerers. We'll be right back. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. The Beskar belongs to the Mandalorians. This podcast belongs to you. Here's more Tribe of Two.
If you want to send the feedback, it's easy. Mando@baldmove.com. Here is a sampling. Fred H. says he wants to talk about the fact that space Jews, not space Jehovah's Witnesses, are the lens that we should be looking through this. And that Bo is going to be the one that leads them to the promised land, the place the armor cannot take them. Fred says, one comment and discussion in the past few episodes on the covert as a cult, they're basically space Jews, right down to the Halakha, the collected Jewish laws governing how one should live, translating as the way. Men and women may, in many groups, wear head coverings during religious services. In a more orthodox communities, they wear them basically all the time. It's entirely reasonable to look at any religion as a cult, and the more orthodox elements of any religion especially. I'm Catholic. The more militant, reactionary, frankly, wackadoodle groups out there trying to bring back Latin Mass and claiming Francis isn't a legitimate pope are not people I'd ever want to live with. And even though the mainstream Catholic Church has its well-documented awful record on protecting children, similarly, there's insular Jewish communities that make other Jews shake their heads. I do think it's worth considering if the story they're telling is different than the one seen filtered through the cult lens. If you pretend the helmet is a yarmulke, or a yarmulke or a shaitel, I think is how you pronounce that, the male and female head coverings respectively, does that change how it scans? There are people who are driven from their homeland and face extermination. They'll pare back a lot of culture flexibility until a new homeland is found. They're wandering in the desert and they're now and only now finding their Boses. Let's see how they are when they get to Canaan. I'm not saying your reading is wrong, nor is your discomfort. We all bring our experiences to us when we interpret a story. I'm just trying to point out an alternate parallel that might be a less clearly bad than space J-dubs. Either way, love your coverage and have a great weekend. Well, thank you, Fred. Jim, what are you, is your response to him trying to calm us down about this whole thing?
Oh, well, I mean, I assume you're right on that this should be viewed more through the lens of the Jewish history and experience than the Jehovah's Witness experience or really any like what you would think of as a cult. But I also, your statement about, you know, any religion could register as a cult also resonates with me. And it really has to depend on, it has to do with like control mechanisms, and there's a pretty severe one. And I look, I'm not familiar enough with the Jewish religion to know if those control mechanisms exist in real serious ways there. So maybe they do. Maybe this is an analog there. But yes, definitely I'm seeing it as the cult angle because of the control mechanisms.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of you know, more modern, I guess, liberal Jewish people, they don't, like, when you're talking about control mechanisms, you're talking about things like disfellowshipping, excommunication, stuff that we know that the Mandalorian cult practices. And I guess that's why when Jim and I are talking about cults, we're not talking about kooky religions with obscure beliefs. We're talking
about...
Yeah,
I don't care if you like to, you know, dress weird and, like, drink strange things, unless they kill you. I don't like that. But yeah, it's not about, like, the customs of the thing. It's about the structures of the religion. And
yeah,
and
we're talking about behaviors. High control groups is what they're technically called. And that doesn't need to be a religious affiliation. It can be a secular thing. It can be a multi-level marketing scheme. It can be a philosophical, and, you know, it can be a lot of different things. But the control that they have over people's beliefs and their lives and their sexuality, and it comes with teeth. It's not like, hey, this is the best. We think this is the best way to live. And our education is free, and take what you want. And then, you know, if it doesn't agree with you, then we can go and part in peace. It's more like the mafia, where it's like, if you join, and it's also one of those things where it's like a tar pit. You know, tar pits are bad because they stay beneath placid waters, and animals go there to drink, and they think, ah, here's a respite, and they step into that cold, clear water, and then, oh God, what is this tarry gunk? And oh, I can't get out, and ah, now I'm drowning. It's the fact that you can't get out of it, and it's also the groups try to hide those dangers beneath these placid waters of peace and brotherhood and all these things to kind of lure you in. And I think that's a fundamental difference between these high control groups and other religions or cults, as kooky as they might all be. And, you know, if we're talking from a secular standpoint, once you start talking about supernatural, it's like all kind of kookies are are kind of the same. You know, like Zeus throwing lightning bolts is, you know, gods with multiple heads and elephant, you know, it's like it's and zombie Jesus. It's all kind of like the of a piece. In terms of like nonsense, right? But wait, we're talking about the high control, and it's anytime that they're like, oh, you don't believe what we believe, well, we're going to take everything from you. The only community you've known is going to turn their back, and you're going to be a child in the world without any parents or brothers or sisters. That's abuse, and that's what I take issue with. And I need, I need to see the Mandalorian cult at least soften on that point. Because really, that's it. Like, if you just ask people to follow away and they can leave anytime they want, I don't got any really problem with it, you know?
And there are religions out there that I would not describe as cults that also have some of those mechanisms built in, but they don't use them as... They're not as quick to use them, I guess. Like, you can be excommunicated as a Catholic.
Right.
But how many people are?
When's the last time it's happened? And also, what is the result of a modern excommunication? Like, you can't take mass, maybe, but like your parents can still talk to you and have a meal with you, and they can attend the birth of a child, and you know that's automatically
the consequences aren't
as
severe. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, but I think that
absolutely right with the Jewish stuff. It should be viewed through that lens.
Probably. Probably. I still have a problem with the excommunication. We'll have to see how it goes. John G says, I only recently caught up with Andor, and it's by far the best thing Star Wars has ever made. But it goes beyond even that. It's the first thing I've seen in a long time, Star Wars or no, that treats rebellion against a powerful tyrannical system realistically and treats me like an adult. People in rebellions have to do bad things to fight bad systems. They often lose themselves in this effort, sacrifice people, do hard things, generally for a future they won't get to live in. I appreciate that someone finally gave me this non-childish view of the world, and a Star Wars thing of all things, it's amazing. John, you might really like The Expanse.
Mm-hmm.
More of that lays with The Expanse. He continues, I don't know if the showrunners at Mandalorian are operating with the same level of excellence, but treating the New Republic the way they have has given me hope that they are. The thing you're complaining about is what gives me hope for the series, because I find that's how it all works. That's why the stories usually end with the rebellion winning their fight, because putting a system back in order after that without using any of the pieces that existed under the old system you just overthrew is not something we've ever seen happen in our own real history on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Take, for example,
when I'm not complaining about the story they're telling. When I say like the New Republic is stupid, what I'm saying is the New Republic is making decisions that they have to make based on the facts on the ground, and like they're not acknowledging the dangers, you know.
And I do think it's unfortunate when they have Tim Meadows come on, not as a serious performance, but kind of a bumbling comedic performance, because I do think it undercuts the very real things we're talking about here, John. So that's something I do complain about. But he wants to take an example, the Russian Revolution in 1917. In order to maintain a system that existed at all after winning control, one that didn't fall utterly into chaos, they had to put in place many of the same bureaucrats that had just done those jobs for the Tsar, the people they'd just overthrown. This rehabilitation program we see in Mando and the inefficiencies of bureaucracy, perpetually short on resources and struggling to meet expectations across a vast territory of planetary systems, is great to me. It's very realistic. That old military or governmental organization out in the outer rim would quickly be breeding grounds for an empire rising again makes perfect sense. It's not a comment on a New Republic in particular, but on how anyone anywhere who goes through something like this, the skills needed to create and sustain a covert rebellion long enough to build it to fighting strength is very different from becoming the government of all that space. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. Honestly, as much as we love revolutions, because especially in our country, the history of that, like, they're not have a great track record. A lot of times what replaces them is in many ways as awful as the thing that was before, if not more so. I mean, I'm not saying revolutions are bad. It's kind of the only thing you got if the government's shitting on you and they won't stop. But I'm just saying that, like, it's a desperate throw of the dice to escape an intolerable situation. It's not like, oh, right, we'll just break the revolution glass and we'll fight a war for a couple of years. And then once the right people are in charge, everything's going to be hunky dory. So that point's all well taken. I'm a big tonal shift kind of guy, and anytime you're doing with something, you're talking about serious subjects like, are droids sentient beings? Is the New Republic, you know, doing a good job of maintaining control of the galaxy while they're also trying to respect people's individual lives? I hate seeing it turned into a fucking Benny Hill joke or a Monty Python skit. Like,
yeah.
And it's not that Mando can't be funny. It's just you can't be funny when you're doing certain topics and scenes and stuff. And, you know, when I see Star Wars torturing droids and it's seen as a joke in like Jabba's palace and stuff like that, it's like that's where it's like I'm just like, I don't know if that's it, Chief. But again, that's just me.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the climate change comedy satire that came out not too long
don't
ago
was it like don't DiCaprio look up or something
and... yes yeah it's it that's kind of why I didn't care for that. It's because it treated the subject a little too, I mean, I know it's a satire and that's kind of the point, but something about it, I can't laugh when we're in the midst of killing ourselves, you know.
Yeah, it's just like I don't like those narco shows anymore, as badass as they are. It's because it's like, god damn, I hate being entertained by the drug war, something that's caused so much misery for so long that it's hard for me to enjoy stories set in those tales, or in that world. Let's move on to Steve. It says, can we all at least agree that the Quarren captain's eloping was very selfish? This is the previous episode.
Sure. I mean, I don't know all the backstory there, but
right.
Yeah, I suppose so. Eloping typically is fairly selfish.
I mean, that's love, right? You know? I did love the tube throne, the tube captain chair for the Quarrens and the Mon Calamari's, where they got like a little liquid tube that they can kind of, and then
it's their crash couch, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was a really solid concept for like aquatic beings. Jesse says, am I crazy or did Filoni and Fav miss the tremendous opportunity to connect back to the IG-11 plot thread with Din encountering these Ugnaughts? They probably have the parts and he didn't even ask. Well,
yeah,
Jesse, they had bigger plans for IG-11 than bringing him back to life. Why do that?
Mm-hmm.
We can have his corpse being piloted by the adorable Grogu.
just to show you how, where people's thoughts were last week. And finally, Christopher says, I think that chapter 22 would have been far better if Commissioner Hellgate fesses up to or hints at having Moff Gideon being behind the sabotage of droids on Plaser 15. This would tie the episode to the Mandalorian overarching plot and not the prequels. Thus, the Jyn and Bo-Katan sleuthing and murder mystery of the episode has a Mandalorian payoff, not a Count Dooku payoff. It makes sense that Moff Gideon is trying to destabilize the New Republic galaxy, not the Separatists. By having Commissioner Hellgate work for Moff Gideon, it would further validate the suspicions of Captain Teeva and heighten the mystery of who is behind the bad stuff happening on various planets. Wouldn't the simple plot change solve the problems that everyone has with this episode? The cameo appearances would merely show how evil Moff Gideon's plotting is to place even Alice of Wonderland's goofy elected rulers under his long arm of manipulation and show how various governments are vulnerable to the remains of the Empire and emerging First Order. You guys have the best Mando podcast by far. Well, thanks, Christopher.
Oh, Jesus. You're...
So I watched this once, you know, because I was off on vacation, and I quite enjoyed it. I kind of like when I don't have to make extensive commentary on the Mandalorian episode. And I've got some thoughts, but I want to know what you thought of this feedback about it'd be better off if we didn't bring the Separatists back.
Well, I mean, when I look at this episode and what they're clearly trying to do now that I have more information, they're trying to show that there are a lot of like different factions out there that want to see the end of the New Republic. It's not just the Imperials, but you get the impression that like in the right circumstances, they could all be allied together, right? Like look what happened in Andor, where you've got all of the, you've got Forrest Whitaker out there wanting to do his own thing. And you've got Stellan Skarsgård out there trying to unite all these different factions, right? Even though they don't believe in the same things, they don't want to approach things the same way. I think that's what the Empire is trying to do here. And I know it's hard with Separatists because they don't like the Empire, but maybe they don't like the New Republic, the people in power, more than they don't like working with the Empire to remove them from power.
Yes. And that's exactly what I was thinking, that I actually think it's cool that you have like this, these really old throwbacks. It's like they've seen the Empire. You know, they saw the old Republic fall because they were corrupt, and they separated from that because they saw them as corrupt and unable to, you know, address their needs, and they're oppressive with their rules and regulations. And then they fell to they got their ass handed to them. But then they fell. The old Republic fell to the Empire, and obviously the Separatists weren't on board with that. And then the New Republic, the Rebellion wins and reinstates a New Republic, and that's a total fiasco. I kind of like that, like, I mean, we have in 2023 Americans that unironically want to return, like think the monarchy is a good idea, that's how we fucked up is when we went away from that. They want, like, a theocratic monarchical regime. They're not very big.
I mean, we have people who want authoritarian regimes to come back. I mean, the fascism, like, it's
right like there's some all stuff stripes. Like when things are bad, people just start casting around for like, oh shit, what used to work, what could it work? And you know, people that are not super strong students of history especially. And I feel like that is kind of a realistic thing they're doing, that there would be this kind of hold back that's like, well, now the New Republic is fucking up, what, let's get the Separatist thing back going, because that was the true answer, that was the third part, that's the Green Party, right? Libertarian candidates that we needed to fix everything. I don't know. I think this is part, also a deliberate part of the double F's to widen out and make this world make sense. It's not going to always come back to the Republic and to the Empire. It's going to be a much more non-binary type political world, where you have Hutts and Separatists and Imperial warlords and New Republics and spies within them and squabbling bureaucrats and disaffected wealthy elites, and it's just a fucking mess, and that's cool. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it feels like an updated Star Wars, honestly.
Yeah, it's a little less black and white. And the thing that I guess that's the thing that I really am curious is like, how are they going to balance the family friendly nature of what they're clearly trying to do with also doing like a hard-bitten, you know, war and rebellion and subterfuge, you know, Cold War espionage. Like, how do you do that at the maturity level that they're pitching?
Out there,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. How do you
I don't know, man.
Yeah, and it's possible that they're such brilliant storytellers that they've accounted for all this and like all this obvious hypocrisy and contradictions between the droids and their like. What if there's like a no shit droid uprising?
Okay,
like not the separatists it, right? Using a droid army that's completely, but like these are fully sentient droids that have mind. Yeah, like that would be another faction that the New Republic would have to worry about. I think that's the way to go because the black and white system just did not work in the new trilogy. Just getting the rebellion and the empire, and you need something more complex to tell a complex story, and I think that's what they're trying to do. I don't think they could fail. Like, I'd give it 50-50 at this point whether they can actually pull this off. But I like that they're actually trying, though. I think that's really cool. Any other thoughts, Jim?
No, I'm good.
Let's wrap this shit up and ship it off inside an Imperial probe droid to everybody. Mando at baldmove.com is how you reach us, or just send a hulking, vicious Imperial probe droid to our house. Mm-hmm. That's how you contact people in this universe, or Mando at baldmove.com. You can also follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/baldmove. If you want to find out all the amazing things we're covering that are not Mandalorian, Mandalorian's wrapping up. So is Picard. We still got Yellow Jackets running strong. There's a bunch of other stuff that we got. Actually, we're going to be checking out Renfield, the movie tonight. Guardians of the Galaxy, Fast X coming up. Check that out, twitter.com/baldmove. And finally, if you'd like to support us, if you like the ad-free feeds and a ton more, like literally thousands of hours of bonus content, check out our club, support.baldmove.com. Thanks for spending some Mando time with us this week. We'll be back next week, which I think is the finale.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Or the prequel episode for Ahsoka. We'll find out next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
May the Force be with you.